Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, a podcast that unpacks international trade and how it affects you without putting you to sleep.
Welcome, everybody, to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. I'm Lori Wallach, and today we are honored to have Fatima Hassan joining us from Cape Town, South Africa, and Sangeeta Shashikant joining us from the UK. These two women lawyers are amazing advocates during the COVID crisis. Fatima founded the Health Justice Initiative in Cape Town. She's a South African human rights lawyer and social justice activist, and she was just awarded the prestigious Calgary Peace Prize for 2022. Sangeeta is the legal advisor and coordinator for development and intellectual property at Third World Network, the amazing global organization of lawyers, advocates, and scholars fighting for justice in the global economy. Sangeeta is based in the UK, but spends a lot of time in Geneva, Switzerland, at the World Trade Organization, fighting for a more just and equitable economy and access to medicines. And so these two amazing women have played a key role in the fight to get the World Trade Organization out of the way of access globally to COVID-19 vaccines, treatments, and tests. From day one, they've been involved. And today we're going to hear what the latest is, because there's a lot of confusion. For folks who didn't see this by March 15th, Politico Europe reports a deal has been reached. Fatima.
The news was that there had been, in inverted commas, a compromise text and a compromise agreement between four countries or four members or four blocs, the EU, the US, South Africa, and India. And that was surprising to us because for 17 months and longer, the South African and Indian government have really powerfully led a global call for the full wave of all intellectual property restrictions on all the different technologies that would help us mitigate this pandemic. And so when you ask the question of what exactly happened to us, it appears that there was an attempt by the Secretariat of the WTO to steamroll a compromise to get a what's called a negotiated settlement on terms that are really favorable to only the pharmaceutical industry and to certain political forces, particularly the EU and to some extent the US.
Sangeeta, can you just unpack a little bit for the listeners what was in that text?
So discussions in the WTO on the TRIPS waiver proposal have been stalled, largely because of the positions of the EU. And the US has also not really contributed much to the discussion. And this has been for most part of 2021, even after the US offered support for an IP waiver for vaccines. Now, in January, the Director General of WTO initiated a process of high-level discussions among four countries, the EU, US, South Africa, and India, known as the Quad. And in mid-March, we saw a text was leaked in the media. And this text reflected the lowest common denominator, the hardline position of the EU that has been opposed to waiving IP barriers, as you have mentioned, and the US insistent that any text must be limited to vaccines. Although domestically, US is very clear that therapeutics and diagnostics are key to addressing a COVID-19 pandemic.
When Biden just said that in his State of the Union address a couple months ago.
Exactly, as part of the test and treat strategy. But worse still, the text contains several additional obligations that makes it more difficult to override IP barriers. It does not address the need to override the barriers to accessing know-how. So the leaked text was wrongly presented by the media as a compromise text arising from the Quad discussions. But now we know there has been no agreement on the text. India and South Africa have not agreed on the text. On 16th of March, the WTO Director General clarified there was no agreement on the text. Later on, the United States Trade Representative, Catherine Tai, has confirmed there has been no agreement on the text.
So let me just underscore something to make sure everyone heard what you said. Parts of this leaked text actually made things harder, worse, added complications beyond the existing WTO complications. Not only didn't it make it better, it made it worse.
Yes, there are parts of this text that has actually made it more difficult to override the intellectual property barriers because it added additional conditions that had to be complied with, which does not exist in the existing TRIPS agreement.
So, Sangeeta, practically, how does it work with these WTO rules? How does that pose a barrier that you're saying that the waiver could get out of the way so more people could get meds?
So we see in this COVID-19 pandemic, there are some very important tools we need to prevent and treat COVID-19. And these are in particular vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics. So what we are really dealing with is a novel pathogen. There are many, many unknowns. But what we do know is that we are dealing with a virus that is constantly mutating with the potential for new and more lethal variants. So many experts have pointed out it's not a matter of if, but when we will see this new and more lethal variants. TRIPS agreement, the trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, this international agreement sets the standards on intellectual property that all WTO members have to follow. And these standards on intellectual property would cover categories of intellectual property such as patents, trade secrets, copyright, industrial designs, and others. And each of these technologies, be it vaccines, therapeutics, diagnostics, and other medical products that will be needed for COVID-19, that have been needed for COVID-19, each of these technologies are protected by different categories of intellectual property. So you might have a medicine with many patents on it. And when there are patents, what you will find is that the patent holder, and this would be Big Pharma, would have monopoly, and no other local manufacturer can manufacture the product and make it available without the consent of the patent holder. So these are the monopolies that will actually hinder the scaling up of manufacturing. In the case of vaccines, not only would you have patents, you would also have trade secrets because a lot of the know-how in the manufacturing of vaccines is protected by trade secrets.
So these WTO monopolies, seems like the opposite of free trade right there, help the big pharmaceutical companies basically limit supply and keep the prices high. Fatima?
Let's take a step back. You'll remember last year, we all got really excited when the Biden administration announced that they would support a partial waiver in relation to vaccines. So a year later, the news was that there had been, in inverted commas, a compromise text. And in the days subsequent to that, it transpired that the South African and Indian government did not actually sign off on what's called the leak text and do not support it, and they haven't signed off on it. And the U.S. actually indicated that there was no agreement on the text. So obviously, there's a lot of confusion, and I think it points to what civil society has been saying in the last few weeks, that there is an attempt by the WTO to do two things, to make itself relevant in this pandemic, because for the last 18 months, it's been unable to do so. It's actually been an obstacle to meaningful access for many of us here in Africa. And secondly, I think it's trying to make sure that it remains relevant through trying to get some kind of, you know, agreement that doesn't really serve our interests. Push through the processes at the WTO.
And I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit to what happened in South Africa and India. Mm-hmm. Civil society around the world looked with admiration at the really sophisticated way that civil society in those two countries responded to the leaked text. And also, what is civil society in South Africa demanding now vis-a-vis the leaked text, but more broadly about how to get the WTO out of the way?
Thanks. Great question. So I think I'll answer the second part first. What we're asking our government to do is to go back to the negotiating table and to make sure that they come up with an agreement that actually serves the interests of millions and millions of poor people in the global south. Because this leaked text is not that solution. It's not even a compromise. In fact, we've argued that it basically will tie our hands behind our back. It will continue to keep us in a hostage situation in this particular pandemic, and that it merely offers a few crumbs. We want the full waiver. So when you ask, you know, what did civil society and academics and researchers and IP experts and economists and unionists and faith-based leaders and faith organizations do in South Africa. Obviously, the first thing was that we, you know, were surprised that this would even be leaked as a text that South Africa agreed to, because we believe that they did not. But you'll remember that the DG of the WTO even issued a statement to say that, in fact, this still has to go for further discussion, and there was no resolution as yet, similar to what Ambassador Tai said to the US Congress. Surprising that it was even leaked as a purported agreement. But based on, you know, the leadership that our government had showed for the last 17 months, for us, this was just incredulous that this is even something that they would agree to, which is why for us it suggested that something was not quite right and that some effort at steamrolling was at play. And the work that civil society did in South Africa with the support of organizations and, you know, partners around the world was to ensure that our government fully understood the implications of every single word in this purported leaked text, and to ensure that the public understood it too. And so, you know, the typical advocacy work that one has to do in a pandemic where things are moving so fast was to share as much information as possible, and then to share that with the relevant decision makers and policy makers. We would love to support a settlement that could enhance equity, but this deal is not it. And having those voices globally, as well as regionally and locally, saying that this is a really bad deal, like this should not be done in our name, I think was really an important way for government to understand that while we have supported them for the last 17 or 18 months in trying to advocate for the TRIPS waiver, we will not back down.
And then a lot of people start to weigh in. And that includes letters by very prominent developing country economists, partnered with very prominent developed country economists, basically warning that the text would be damaging. And the Archbishop of Cape Town weighs in. And Dr. Reddy, the basically founder of generic medicines in India. And they're all writing to the president of South Africa, President Ramaphosa, and they're writing to the prime minister of India, Prime Minister Modi, and civil society organizations and scholars are doing petitions to their governments in those countries and sending letters to their governments. And the sunshine that gets injected on what that actual text means is, for everyone, a lesson in what actually folks can do as scholars, as activists, as citizens, when there's a really important policy matter. Because really, it was an effort of scholars, of activists around the world to really spotlight what really was going on, that made sure that a text that would have maybe made things even worse than the status quo didn't accidentally get enacted.
We've reached a position where South Africa and India and other countries in the global south are saying, hey, hang on a minute, this is not the text that we agreed to, and this is not what we support. So one day we hope we'll get to the bottom of what actually happened and why this was leaked as a version that purported to be of those four, the EU and the US, South Africa and India, but your guess is as good as mine.
So it sounds like good news that South Africa and India, and it sounds like the US also didn't support this so-called stampede text. I guess the idea was to try and make believe it was a compromise, so it became a compromise. But then what happens next? Because we still have got these WTO barriers in our way. And as you've pointed out, until the whole world has access to these medical tools, everyone's at risk. So first of all, what's the next step?
Well, I would like to say that apart from South Africa, India, US, we have, I think many developing countries would find the text extremely problematic. It is a departure from the globally supported proposal to waive intellectual property obligations so that they are not a barrier to production and access in developing countries. In fact, the text would not even qualify as a TRIPS waiver or anything really meaningful in trying to address intellectual property barriers. And as I've mentioned, you know, it adds conditions, makes it more difficult for countries to override IP barriers. It does not address the key issues that are needed to access know-how. So In short, it will be further hindering production and access.
That should go in the recycling bin and they should go back to the original text.
Yes, we have to go back to the original text. We are trying to address a concrete problem, which is intellectual property barriers. And there is a very significant proposal, a real proposal that has been globally supported, that has been discussed extensively, the waiver proposal. And we just need a temporary waiver to address the key intellectual property barriers.
And I just want to throw in here that this waiver business is not like a unicorn. There are waivers all the time. I guess that's a kind of a hard deadline, is the WTO is theoretically going to have, third time might be the charm, it's been canceled twice because of COVID, is maybe going to have its ministerial conference, which is its big decision-making meeting in the middle of June. What do you think is going to happen? Do you see some prospect for something helpful happening to get the WTO barriers out of the way as we head towards this big WTO confab?
So the WTO Director General is likely to send the text to the TRIPS Council. This is the committee that deals with IP matters in the WTO for further discussions.
It does concern us and it does worry us that there is an effort, we believe, by the WTO Secretariat in particular, to now table this leaked text as its version of a so-called agreement. But I think, thankfully, we've reached a position where South Africa and India and other countries in the Global South are saying, hey, hang on a minute, this is not the text that we agreed to, and this is not what we support.
And then all the member countries can kind of have at it.
Yeah, it gives WTO members a very important opportunity to deliver a real and meaningful waiver outcome to get WTO IP barriers out of the way. We have to see what will happen, but it is a real opportunity for WTO members to do something meaningful to address access.
So it's going to be an interesting dynamic if this text that isn't a waiver and doesn't really fix things and could make things worse is put into committee when so many of the countries actually support the thing that could be effective, and that's the real deal.
The waiver proposal has 65 co-sponsors, but beyond the 65 co-sponsors, there are many other WTO members that support the waiver. And once it's brought to the TRIPS Council for discussion, I think it is important to firstly amend the proposal so that it would reflect the original intent and the vision of the waiver proposal, because the original vision and intent of the waiver proposal was straightforward waivers of intellectual property obligations so that we can get intellectual property barriers out of the way so that manufacturers can have the freedom to operate. They can immediately enter the market. They do not have any fear of, you know, the risk of potential intellectual property infringement. They have the freedom to operate and they can enter the market. You know, this is what is needed. We need to scale up manufacturing. We need to diversify manufacturing because the global demand is huge. We need not just availability, we also need affordability. And we do need to have more manufacturers in developing world engage in the production and supply so that we can have greater and more diversified supply options.
Well said. Just so our listeners understand what's at stake, how is access around the Global South going? I have seen numbers that say in some of the least developing countries in Africa, it's less than 1%. On average, it's maybe 12% for vaccines. And it looks like half the world just can't even get access to the treatments we know are life-saving. What practically is at stake here?
If we look at vaccines, vaccination in low-income countries is very, very low, especially in Africa, which has a lot of low-income countries, and there the rate is extremely low. And that continues to be a threat for the mutating virus. We are likely to see even more lethal variants as large parts of the world are not vaccinated. But beyond low-income countries, what we know is that two rounds of vaccination is not sufficient. We need an additional dose. We will potentially need revaccination with new generation vaccines, you know, because the vaccines do not prevent transmission. So we will need therapeutics if you want to have a sustainable economy and economy that continues to be open, to avoid lockdowns, you want to protect livelihoods and lives, we will need access to therapeutics.
This is really a key point. Because for all the happy sales job we're hearing from pharma and certain governments, it's not like this is a one and done. Sangeeta's point is we need this capacity for the long term. In the face of a global deadly pandemic that has killed 15 million people, at least worldwide, according to the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization's intellectual property monopolies that protect big pharma have been in the way of saving people's lives.
So now is the moment we really need to actually adopt this waiver, despite its potential, and many experts around the world, civil society, Nobel laureates, legal experts have all agreed that it has great potential to contribute to controlling the spread of COVID-19. Unfortunately, WTO has delayed and dragged its feet on this matter.
The WTO for us is an obstacle. For 18 months, it has not been able to come up with a consensus on the original TRIPS waiver proposal. It has dragged the negotiations out, and now, incredulously, it wants to say to us that this is the best deal that there is on the table and that we should accept it. It is an obstacle, and it is so enraging for us as activists in the Global South who have had to wait and wait for vaccines, and many of us are still waiting in our countries for even our first shot or even our second shot. To have to go and beg at the WTO, which is a trade body, to ask the WTO to give us a solution into this pandemic instead of the World Health Organization. We live in a perverse world. If we have to be beholden to an international system of trade rules to be able to get access to life-saving technologies, there is something wrong with the fact that for 17 and a half or 18 months, they haven't been able to get this waiver passed when 100 countries support it, when there are at least 65 co-sponsors. I mean, how can you have a WTO system that is totally beholden to the interests of four or five countries that continue to block the TRIPS waiver because of the interests of, you know, a handful of pharmaceutical companies who are unelected, who are unaccountable, and who are really not interested in the lives of poor people in the Global South?